everybody. I'm Susan. I'm an alcoholic. And what a blessing it is to know Sandra. So many people make such a difference in my life, and the women I sponsor, you know, are a huge part of that. She called me up the day after my birthday a week ago. I had my belly button birthday, and I got this message on my phone that she sang me happy birthday. It was just the sweetest thing, and she was homesick that day. So, gosh, what a life, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me such an incredible, beautiful life today with the support, the fellowship, the service. All of it is more than I could ever dreamed of. I've been sober since July 28th, 1984, which is truly, truly a miracle of God. God gets the credit, definitely. And I know God's works through all of you who have given me a tremendous amount of support, and I'm so grateful. You know, I've heard so many good messages on my phone lately from people calling with support, and you know, the group that I went to Gatesville with this morning, so many good things there, and you know, it's just God working through everybody. Boy, what a great deal. Anyway, let's see. Okay, I was born in Houston in 1956, and I come from a really, really nice family. I lucked out, and I got a really good deal with my parents. They're really good, sweet people. I have a sister 2 years younger. We moved to Illinois when I was just a baby, and I really had a happy childhood in Illinois. I'm the only one in my immediate family who's an alcoholic, so I'm like the black sheep of the family, you know. But I do have two grandfathers that were alcoholics, so I believe that I inherited the alcoholic gene from them. And, you know, I was just an alcoholic waiting to happen. I know that I was a real sensitive child, you know. I think that I was, like, born missing something, the wisdom and ability to handle life, like some people just automatically have. I just never seemed to have that. And my parents taught me really good values. We went to church. I really believed in God, and I wanted to be the best person I could be. But, you know, like, if anyone was critical of me, I took that to heart. And, you know, to me, that just meant that I was just, you know, really not a very good person. You know, I took things really, really hard instead of just brushing them off, you know, and realizing that sometimes people just weren't nice, and, you know, sometimes the things that people say aren't true. But anyway, and sometimes I wasn't nice, and that's okay too, because, you know, nobody's perfect. But we moved from Illinois to Houston when I was 10, and that was really, really a hard time for me. I missed my friends terribly. And it was like a completely different culture, you know, from Illinois to Houston. All the kids seemed to be really grown up in Houston, and I still felt like a little kid. I had this short, curly hair, and all the girls were wearing their hair long and straight, and I felt really unattractive. I met some boys in my neighborhood who weren't very nice and used to make fun of me and, you know, the way I looked, and I was really afraid that I was never going to be pretty enough. And I just started to become really afraid and insecure, because I felt different. You know, all those aspects of alcoholism were there, and I just never felt like I fit in. I never had enough approval from people. I didn't approve of myself enough. And I started to move away from my spiritual values, and I just wanted to fit in, you know. And I was willing to just do just about anything to get the approval of my peers. I remember when I was 13, I took my first drink of alcohol, and I loved the effect of the alcohol. I had come up with this idea that I was going to fill up Welch's grape juice bottles with the liquor in my parents' liquor cabinet and snuck that out with some friends to a football game. And boy, it was wonderful, you know. I really felt pretty for the first time, I felt like I had enough personality and enough of everything I needed to be, and it was a great feeling. You know, the Big Book talks about how we loved the effect of the alcohol, and definitely, you know, I just fit everything in there. And of course, I got sick and I got in trouble when I went home. And although I felt guilty for upsetting my parents, you know, I knew that I had to keep drinking. I knew that I needed to do more of that. And so I was always planning, you know, the next time that I get to go out and drink at parties with friends. And it just kind of became this deal to where I would go out and drink and party, and then I would hate myself the next day and feel guilty because I was hurting my family and not living up to the morals that I had been taught. So I really had a lot of internal conflict going on there, you know. And I started having blackouts as a teenager, which was really scary. I didn't remember the things I did the next day. I had no idea. I started sneaking out my parents' car and having car accidents, wrecking their car, you know. And they would have these, you know, take me in and have these good talks with me, you know, these lectures of, you know, how I needed to straighten up and follow the rules and live right. And, you know, I would always say, oh, sure, you know, and feel really, really bad and promise that I would stop doing that and never do that stuff again. And I didn't know why I did what I did. I really didn't have any idea. And I think that they were in complete denial of my alcoholism. So I kept trying to promise and apologize that I would do differently, and I never did, of course. And I continued to have parties when they went out, you know, that wrecked the house and the yard and neighbors complained. And skip school and go out and drink with my friends, and they continued to lecture me, you know, and try to discipline me. So I started to, you know, it's a spiritual, mental, and physical disease, our book says. And I just really began to deteriorate spiritually and mentally. The self-hatred in me grew and grew and grew. I began to withdraw from my friends, because the truth was, all my friends loved me, and my family loved me, and I had a lot of potential as a student, but I didn't believe in myself, and I started to tell myself that I wasn't worthy of my friends, and I wasn't worthy of anything, and so I just withdrew from everybody. And then I began, my mind, the disease, just kept lying to me and telling me, and I would believe it, you know, that I wasn't good enough and that it was you people that were being mean to me. After a while, I projected it out there and I decided that everyone else was mean and it wasn't really me. I didn't realize that I was my own worst enemy, really. So I started to hide when my friends came over after school. I wanted to sleep in the afternoon. And my mother was trying to get me to, you know, go out and be social with my friends, but I didn't want to very much anymore. And I would go to some parties and get drunk, but most of the time I just wanted to hide away. I had a boyfriend in high school who tried very much to love me and let me know I was worthwhile, but I didn't believe it. I couldn't believe it, so it was a very chaotic relationship, and I, you know, it finally just ended, and, you know, and then I could sit around and feel sorry for myself, but I just didn't believe that I was worthy of anything. I can remember sitting in front of the mirror and telling myself I hated myself over and over and over again. So I became very self-destructive. Instead of staying on the path of God and knowing that I'm a child of God, you know, I just went the other direction. I ended up dropping out of high school because I would not go to school. I just kept skipping school. And the principal and my mother, you know, really tried to work with me, but he finally told my mother to let me drop out of high school because he couldn't keep me in. So my parents decided that was fine. I could go to a GED school, and I did that, you know, and I got my GED. And then I decided I was going to go off to college when I was 18 and give that a try. And, you know, I really didn't have any reality. Reality just was something It's something even in sobriety I've had to work on, but to realize who I really am, what I'm really capable of, what I really want. Well, I went off to college, and of course I didn't like school, and I had no idea what I wanted to do with myself and what I was capable of, and, you know, had all these different majors and took all these classes and ended up with 12 hours, you know, is all. And most of the time, you know, I just wanted to party with my friends. The first year I had to live in a dorm and ended up getting kicked out of that dorm. They asked me not to come back again, you know, because I wasn't willing to follow the rules. And so I moved into a house with some girls in college. And, of course, all of them started to complain about my drinking and, you know, that they were afraid of me driving drunk and they were afraid to be in the car with me. And then I felt like a victim again. Here's more mean people, you know? I mean, gosh, you know, how could they be saying that to me, treating me like that? So my parents helped me to get my own little apartment where I wouldn't have to deal with these mean people, you know? They did come up to visit me, though, because they did, you know, get really concerned with when my friend said, you know, that maybe Susan really has a problem with her drinking. We're really concerned about her. And they came up and talked to me, and, you know, I convinced them that, you know, that I really was okay and that those people were too critical. And they left. Anyway, finally, you know, I just gave up on the college thing and was ready to move on and go to work. And moved back to Houston from, I'd gone to Tyler Junior College and did not graduate. Got some little job. I ended up having jobs for years. I don't know how many jobs I had, you know. I would go to work somewhere and call in sick a lot. I had lots of horrible hangovers from my drinking. And I would want to nurse those hangovers all day, you know. Eventually get myself fired, or I had this incredible fear of people, you know, and I would get in there and think that there was somebody mean at the job and I couldn't handle that personality. So I would just leave the job and call my parents and borrow money, and I just lived like that, you know, through my early 20s and felt very ashamed of myself. I really didn't know how to be a very good friend. I didn't know how to show up and be there for people, and I needed to drink to feel good about myself at all. So I had a hard time having friendships. And as far as relationships with men, those were just impossible because I couldn't give myself enough to be there and be present and be a good girlfriend. I loved the alcohol. The alcohol was my best friend. It was. And though I studied spiritual books and went to church, I didn't know how to live it at all. I wasn't able to find a way to live spiritually until I got to AA. My friends from college, you know, some of them moved to Houston, and I spent some time with them at parties, and some of them complained about my drinking, but I never, ever got the message that I was an alcoholic. It's just unbelievable how strong the denial can be in this disease. You know, I never could see it. And I just felt victimized anytime anybody complained, of course, you know, about me. I would wake up afraid every morning after I drank with my friends that I was going to lose those friends, that they were going to hate me because I'd done something bad, you know, and I didn't remember what I did in blackouts. Sometimes I would leave bars with a stranger and feel horrible the next day, you know, just truly ashamed because that was against my morals. And that was a scary thing. This disease is truly a progressive illness, and it just got worse and worse, you know, the years that I drank. I remember one night I was sitting home in my apartment and watching TV, drinking my beer, and the movie Days of Wine and Roses came on, which is a really old movie made in the 1930s about two alcoholics that are just seriously alcoholic, just like I was, and I related to those people. I knew that's what I was. I could see myself in those people. And the next day, I decided I was going to try to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. So I looked it up in the phone book and found a group, which just happened to be right across the street from my apartment complex. And anyway, I went into that meeting, and I just remember this crowd of people standing around, and I looked at it all, and I got scared, and I left. And so I just wasn't ready to do it at that point. But I was going to get there. It wasn't long after that that I went to a bar with a group of friends celebrating somebody's bridal shower and got arrested for public intoxication because I couldn't walk around in the bar. I was stumbling drunk, you know. It got in those years that I would start stumbling drunk and babbling. I couldn't even talk. And I know that I really fought with that policeman. I was really angry. But anyway, that was my first arrest. And my parents bailed me out of jail, and I decided, well, I better try that Alcoholics Anonymous thing again, you know. That may be the answer for me. And so I started going back to AA. And I can remember when I walked in the room that time, there was this feeling there, and it's indescribable, but I know it was God saying, this is where you need to be. You know, that there's something really good and really special here, really wonderful. And I met a woman. She came up to me and greeted me and gave me her phone number, like we do in here, and offered to help. And but I wasn't ready to stop drinking, and I was going to go in and out of the program from 1981 to 1984. It wasn't long after that that I got arrested for DWI. And so I would go to meetings, and then I would go back out to the bars, and I loved the bars. You know, I just lived for going to bars. I was always looking for a party and a good time and an escape, and that was how I had fun. But the truth was, is I was really not happy. I was miserable inside. I didn't like myself. I couldn't connect with people. You know, I had the love of my family and the love of my friends, even if I didn't believe it, but I didn't love myself. So I couldn't really love anybody else, and I couldn't have any really intimate relationships. I was really disconnected. So anyway, I went in and out of AA, and finally, you know, that AA message got through, though. It got through. And thank God, I finally embraced the truth. I had about a year and 3 months at one point, but I was only halfway into the program. I was coming in the program and going to meetings and sort of working the steps, but I didn't want to hang out with the AA people because I thought they were kind of weird, you know. And I just was kind of doing half measures deal. And so I went out and I drank one night in 1984. And all I could think of was AA and everything everybody had been saying to me in AA. It was a miserable time, a miserable drunk. I didn't enjoy the bar. I felt like I didn't belong there, you know, and that everybody was looking at me like I was this weird lady who didn't belong there. The next day I woke up with a typical hangover, and grateful I hadn't gotten arrested or gone home with a stranger, which were the worst things that had happened, you know, during my drinking years. But anyway, you know, I had this really bad hangover that I was nursing, and I just thought, okay, this is it. I really, really worked the first step then. I knew in my heart that I had conceded to my innermost self that I really, really, really was an alcoholic. And I remember asking God, saying, please help me stay sober, regardless of whatever pain I ever have to go through. I never want to drink again. And God answered that prayer. You know, because that, I haven't taken a drink since the night before that. And, of course, I went to AA and got another desire chip and started over. And there was this really kind man in there who I really didn't want much to do with this person because he looked scary to me. You know, he was a motorcycle guy and he dressed like a motorcycle guy. And I didn't hang out with people like that. But he had... He had the AA message, and I guess God spoke through him that day because he made a tremendous difference in my life. And he said, you know, Susan, you just need to let go of the shame because the shame could make you go back out and drink again. And he said, you know, why don't you try asking God to help you stay sober every morning and thank him every night? And, you know, I never talked to that guy much after that. I didn't have much to do, but he made a big difference in my life because those were the words I needed to hear. And I did that. And, you know, I worked the steps again with that sponsor who had been so patient and kind and non-judgmental for the last couple of years while I was going in and out. And, you know, I worked him again, and I went to meetings. And I really finally had that psychic change, that incredible spiritual experience the book talks about. I lost all desire to go to bars. God changed me. I also lost the desire to drink. I decided that I just wanted to hang out with the AA people, you know, to go to coffee and dinner with people. I followed the directions of that sponsor and was willing to do anything she said, even though I was scared to do some of the things that she asked me to do, like after I'd worked the steps to go up to intergroup and sign up to be of service up there, you know, to get in there and chair a meeting, you know. I did it anyway. And one day at a time, I got better. I did have kind of a hard time at about 6 months sobriety. That time, I remember, I got really angry about something at work, and I was imagining that people were rejecting me and leaving me out, which was one of my big imaginary head trips, you know. And that really wasn't going on, but I believed it at the time. And so my mind was lying to me, and I was listening to that thing, and I started thinking about getting a six-pack of beer, and I started wanting to drink. And I heard that still small voice of God say to me in my mind, please ask me for help. And I just was stunned, you know, and just stopped, and I knew it was God. And all I could say was, thy will be done, because I was feeling that rebelliousness and that anger. But I could say those words, and then God just took over and gave me the complete inspiration to go up to the AA group I was going to at the time. And so I got in my car and I drove up there and I went in that group and people were sitting around at tables, and I know I walked up and I said, I really want a drink and I need help. And they talked to me and read from the big book with me, and I went to a meeting, and then after that I went to coffee and dinner, and I've never had a desire to drink since then. It was completely removed after that. You know, over the years I've had fleeting thoughts occasionally, but rarely. I've had drunk dreams, you know, which are kind of odd, but, you know, and they're not all the time, but I've never wanted to drink. And I just know that we're never cured of alcoholism. You know, we have but a daily reprieve based on working this program. I'm so grateful that that was completely removed, you know. And the book says that we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that has come true for me, you know. Insanity of thinking that I can drink and wanting to drink has been completely removed. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And it's just been an incredible, wonderful journey. So I was working the steps with my sponsor, doing the very best that I could with the steps. And I know that I gave myself to God the best I could at the time. I gave the alcohol problem over completely, you know. But it was going to be a long, long process for me to give up all of my self-will. I wanted life to be like I wanted it to be. You know, that selfishness, self-centeredness. Well, I didn't get everything right away. And I think that a lot of people don't. You know, I think it's a process for a lot of us. Some are slower than others, and I'm one of those slow ones. It's been, but you know, I don't judge that today. I really believe that God does not want me to judge or condemn myself or anyone else, that it's not my business and that it's just fine, that it's just like it has been, you know. All of it has been truly wonderful these 24 years. I've been grateful every single day that I haven't taken a drink, you know. Every day has been a good day just because I've been sober, even if it didn't always seem like it was a good day in some other ways. But, you know, I really got into that first year and thought, oh, I've got to have a relationship, you know. Now that I'm sober, you know, I deserve to get a relationship. I can finally going to be able to do this, you know? Well, I had no idea how much was wrong with me. You know, the book says liquor is but a symptom. I thought, you know, quit drinking and everything be fixed, you know? Whoa, that's just not the case, because there's just a long period of reconstruction ahead. And I had a lot of problems, a lot of deep-seated character defects, a lot of things that needed to change. So anyway, you know, I was going to learn that that just wasn't the case. And I think I also thought that I was going to come in and work the steps and be perfect. And I didn't understand that we don't get perfect. We just get better, and that we're continually working the steps and growing spiritually. And, you know, we become more willing in time to let go of those character defects. That's been my experience anyway. I've definitely had to grow in that willingness to change and let go of those character defects of mine. So I got in a relationship my first year, and it was a bad relationship. Of course, you know, how could somebody like me, as sick as I was, attract anybody but somebody sick, you know? So, you know, it was this very chaotic relationship, and I think that I did do better than when I was drinking. You know, I was a lot better of a partner than I had been. But so anyway, that was just not a good relationship, and I had a lot of denial about that, and we kept trying to work on it, and I finally decided, well, if I married this man, maybe that would make it better, you know? And of course, that didn't work at all, you know? That just brought everything out and made it so much worse. And so that marriage definitely ended after 6 months. And, you know, I'm just grateful that I got out of that and I didn't drink. To me, that was the thing. No matter what happens, you know, I had made that agreement with God. No matter what happens, I wasn't going to pick up a drink. I didn't want to drink over anything. And my first sponsor had told me, you know, Susan, life is in a fantasy world, and I hope that you can stay sober, because it's just not always easy. And that was definitely the truth. But, you know, I did learn to deal with life on life's terms and not drink. I know that God told me, you know, I believed in the beginning of my sobriety that we had this agreement that God was going to keep me sober, but that I had to be willing to really, really work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that was going to be the way for me. And I have done that. You know, I finally was so sick and tired of those years going in and out and the disease, and I finally had that moment of clarity that I saw it all so clearly. I didn't want to live that way anymore. So I was shown a way to get out of that, you know, when I was really, really through with it, sick and tired of it enough. Anyway, after that relationship ended and I moved on from that, I ended up having just a lot of resentment and a lot of fear. And I wasn't willing to let go of that real easily, you know. I kind of nursed that and kept that and felt like it made me special, I think, and really got into the victim role again. I stayed sober, but I didn't do a lot of things that I needed to do in my sobriety. And I did go to meetings, and I did a little bit of service, but like I said, I held on to those shortcomings, and was really, really afraid of getting involved with men again. And, you know, but my sponsors and everybody said, just keep coming back. I really didn't have what a lot of people wanted, and I ended up being a very lonely person. Since I was just so self-absorbed and so self-involved and kind of negative, there were a lot of people who did not want to be my friend and didn't want to be around me. You know, all those years I had been so afraid of that, and imagine that. It finally started happening. People in AA would have done anything in the world to help me if I needed help. But I just didn't have a lot of people who wanted to hang out with me. So I was kind of lonely for a while. And, you know, I started really, really getting into my relationship with God. But the part that I didn't understand, though, was the getting free of myself and brotherly love and really, really letting go and letting God have everything. That was going to take me a while to get that. So I did have a lot of wonderful experiences, though, in that walk, in that journey, in that time anyway. And finally, I went through some really hard years with depression and even tried medication. And I think medication is wonderful, and a lot of people need it. A lot of people need medication for depression and other things because they truly have a chemical imbalance. But I think I was one of those people who just really, really needed to work my program better. And I was going to find out, trying antidepressants, that they weren't the thing for me. I didn't like them. They didn't work for me. And finally, I realized that I was going to have to work my program better. And God just took care of that. I went to one of the group's anniversaries. I can't remember. I think it was summer. And bumped into my current sponsor. And I heard her talking with people about doing correctional facility work. And I just knew that there was something there that I needed to hear. And I remember talking to that woman and asking her to sponsor me, and she made an incredible, incredible difference in my life. I'm so grateful. She really got me back into the steps, especially 10, 11, and 12. I needed to learn how to really clean house daily, doing a lot of little mini four steps. And then to really, really work on my relationship with God. I had to really look at my understanding and concept of God, that it had gotten to be not a very good concept. I believed in God, but I really didn't believe that God cared for me or was there for me, because some of the things in my life hadn't worked out like I wanted to. I believed God had deserted me. And so I had to look at that concept I had and be willing to replace it with a better one and get a God that was truly personal and loving and caring and there for me, you know. And I began to develop that relationship with a really loving God. I also began to realize that I was the cause of my misery and my problems. It wasn't other people, and it wasn't God. I was making a lot of bad choices based on my self-will that were getting me hurt and unhappy. And that is the biggest spiritual revelation, you know, I've ever had, you know. And that truly, again, I was my own worst enemy. And through the steps, really, really work in the steps, you know, I've gotten free of that. So I also started doing that work in the prisons. And that really, really, really has helped me. One of my closest friends told me that after she saw me start doing the work in the prisons, she saw me get better. She saw a remarkable change in me. And so anyway, I started going to the prisons and to the jails and taking meetings, and I think I found my real purpose in life. The book says that our real purpose in life is to be of maximum service to our fellow man. And I realized then that it was not about me and fulfilling all my selfish desires, but about giving to others and helping others and carrying this AA message. And it's just been so rewarding and fulfilling to do that work. I also got better and started sponsoring a lot of women and was able to carry the message that way and got involved in service work in many ways. I can remember at one point, I still had so much fear, you know, this miserable, imprisoning fear. And my sponsor told me that I needed to face those fears head on. So I really did some good inventorying of those fears and was willing to bring them all to the light of God and to let them all go and realize that God is bigger than any fear I ever have and always there for me. I just have to let go and let God. And I began to outgrow that self-centered fear. I truly became a different person. I started to make all kinds of friends. You know, people wanted to be around me. What a miracle. Yeah. And God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. God helped me to learn to love myself, to have self-esteem, because I let God in. I really, really surrendered. I had to really surrender that self-will and those shortcomings and get out of the way. And then God filled me with the sunlight of the Spirit and healed me. That was a process. And one of the character defects I've had to look at that was also one of the worst ones was self-condemnation. And, you know, I forgave my ex-husband. I forgave all those people that I thought weren't nice. And I forgave everybody. But it took me a long time to forgive myself. That's been the hardest thing. And I finally realized, through a couple of people telling me, that that was really selfish and really pride in reverse to hold on to that. And that was my ego, you know. And so it also diminishes my usefulness to others to have that there. I can't carry the message as well. So I finally began to really let go of that, the self-condemnation. And boy, that's such an incredibly good feeling, because today I feel good about myself inside, and I enjoy being myself and being a friend to myself. And, you know, I really, really like being happy and serene instead of miserable and all that depression and all that stuff. Every once in a while, I still get into that stuff and can call my sponsor. And what she usually says is, that's your ego talking to you again. You need to quit listening to that thing. Try to drag you down, you know. And there's this wonderful formula: trust God, clean house, help others. You know, it's simple and it's so effective. It really, really works when I work it. I'm one of these people who's so rebellious that even though I was embraced this program, I wasn't willing to always do everything it says. And I know it's spiritual progress, not perfection. So that's really okay. And perfectionism is a character defect. You know, it's expecting what I can't be, and that's pride and ego. So I don't need to be there. I can be grateful for progress. I just got to keep willing to do the steps and show up and do this stuff, and it gets better. I'm just so grateful for God, for what God has done for me. This incredible, wonderful life. It has changed dramatically over the years. I have changed dramatically, and my life has changed dramatically, you know. I really, really, really had to learn that surrender of letting go of what I want and how I think things should be, because I don't know what's best for me. I really don't. And I don't even know all the time what's going to really make me happy. And, you know, those steps tell me that, you know, God does. The book talks about spiritual and God so many times. Those words, just in the first couple chapters I found, are in there so many times. This really, really is, you know, about finding God of our understanding, a power greater than ourselves that can solve our problem, that we can't do it on our own, and learning to live a spiritual life, not just think about it and talk about it and say, oh, I'm so spiritual because I believe in God. Yeah, but then I can go out here and hate everybody and resent everybody and hate myself, you know, and be terrified and, you know. No, you know, we got to learn to live this thing. I had to learn to live this thing. And even if it's not perfect, you know, it's one day at a time to keep working at it. And I have seen an incredible amount of progress. I think that, today I have so many friends and so much love and support that, you know, it just blows me away. When I was asked to speak here, and all the people that, you know, just have given me so many pats on the back and shown me so much love, one day I just thought, wow, I'm just blown away by this, God. I can't believe that I have this many friends and these people really like me that much and care about me that much. And, you know, life is so different. And I just know that it's all because of God and what God has done. and that, you know, that I can love y'all and have that brotherly love, and irregardless of anything, and that I can forgive anybody today, because I know that's what the directions in the book say. You know, I may have to do the work on it and go through the process of writing an inventory and really praying a whole lot, because I can't forgive anybody myself. I've got to ask God to help me do that. And I do that enough, and God gets in there, and he changes my view and my heart. It's miraculous what God can do. Yeah. You know, and then to be able to have a message to pass on to others and help them to learn how to heal and work the steps and get better. And then they pass it on. It's an incredible way of life. So, anyway, I can't say enough about what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. You know, it truly is, like the book says, a pleasure to be of service. And I think in Bob's story, Dr. Bob's story, he says, "It's I do the service work because it's my duty. It's a pleasure. I'm paying back a debt to AA, and it's really insurance against taking a drink." And boy, that's for sure, you know. And it's a way to find real happiness, to really, really, really get free of myself and to truly be happy. And because it's living right, it's doing the right thing, and it's connecting with other people also. You know, I have something in common with people today, and I can connect with people in that way and have truly intimate relationships, which is such an incredible blessing. I'm a good daughter today. You know, my relationship with my family healed, and I was able to make those amends in the first couple of years of sobriety. And of course, they were just so happy for me and proud of me. It probably just took them a couple of years to really believe in me, which was understandable, you know. And make amends to the friends that I could find out there. I'm really, 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 really grateful to my family and for their forgiveness, love, and help and support also. And they've given me tons of it over the years that I've been sober. They've been friends to me when I didn't have friends. And they've prayed for me a lot of prayers, you know, which I'm sure have helped too. I know that, you know, I prayed and asked God to help me speak and say what he wanted me to say when I got up here, and figured that that's exactly what was going to happen, you know, that I was going to say what I was supposed to say and tell my story. And, it, you know, it just is what it is. What's really neat is that I know that I'm enough today and I'm good enough because of this program. Woo-hoo! And and all of you are so wonderful, you know. I just wish for everyone to find all of the healing that they need through the working the steps, and to don't give up before the miracle happens, you know. That's one thing about me, is I never would give up, even though I was miserable at times. There was always this idea, I always had hope. I always had hope that it could get better. I just believe that was God in me. You know, that was always motivating me towards recovery and the light, and telling me to never give up no matter what, and helping me find the right people to give me the right message. You know, and today I just have this wonderful relationship with God that where I just feel like God says things like, don't judge yourself, and it's really, really, you know, I'm here for you. And gives me this good orderly direction, you know, and gives me answers. I just have to learn to listen to and accept those answers. They're usually kind of simple, you know, like praying about coming up here and speaking, and what I felt like God said to me was, just tell your story, and that's fine, you know, it'd be enough. And so I don't need to take it any further and look for any more answers, you know. I just need to accept what it is. I know that the time that I was trying to get, that I wanted to get married in early sobriety, I felt like God was saying to me, don't do this. Don't. In fact, I knew God was saying that, you know. But I wasn't willing to listen to that still small voice then. I was still wanting things to be like I wanted, even if they couldn't be. I wasn't willing to accept reality and truth, you know. I wanted to lie to myself and think that I could make it that way, that self-will. And I've had to learn that, you know, self-will just doesn't work. And the truth is what it is. And I have to learn to accept it and make good out of my life with what I've got. It isn't always what I think that I want, but I'm sure that there's a good reason for that. And it's exactly like it's supposed to be. And I have to learn to look at that and be grateful for what I have. Practice the gratitude. And being the depressive type, I've also had to do the inventory and learn to look at the good things that I've done, you know, in my day. And not just the things where I feel that I've messed up. You know, I've become a good employee, which is a miracle. I never could stay at a job anywhere when I was drinking. And in my sobriety, the first job I got, I ended up staying there for 3 years. And then I moved on, and I was trying to figure out what kind of work I wanted to do. And I finally ended up, I did some different things, but today I've been working as a nanny for 11 years, and I love the work I do, and I've really made a connection with the families that I work for, and I've learned how to be a humble employee and to get along with people, and I can just feel like I can get lost giving myself in my work. I've also had to learn, though, that nothing else is God but God, and that it isn't a man, it isn't a relationship, it isn't a friendship, it isn't a sponsor, it isn't a job. And so my real happiness comes from my connection with God, my conscious contact with God, and my dependency has to be on God, you know? Otherwise, I'm just going to realize that all that other stuff, you know, it's not fair to anyone to have my dependency on them too much, but it's not fair to myself either, you know, that I have had to cultivate that relationship with God. I used to be so needy inside, I think that I would look